Reading 13. Official visit, Socotra. God damn and blast it! The Sultan of Socotra has permitted one of Mussolini's Italian survey ships anchorage in his harbour. Confound the man, Hugh. Make arrangements with the Navy tout suite. We sail for Socotra Island tonight. Pop's eyes blaze. With a civil war in the interior, a war brewing in Abyssinia, and Yemenis encroaching onto territory we claimed as ours, it was time, he continued, time for an official visit. Remind the Sultan where his loyalty lies. Persuade the two-timing bastard to let us build an airstrip on his mainland territory at Kishin. Britain long coveted a foothold on the Hadramaut's South Arabian Peninsula. Pop cursed. His hand slammed the deck. The SS Penzance, anchored in the waters off the island's capital, Tamarida, and hoisted our British pennant inviting the Sultan to call. Protocol required the Sultan first call on us. Nothing. No movement on shore. Again and again our request went ignored. Only when we swung the gun turret threateningly toward shore did the Sultan and his retinue scamper hurriedly aboard his barge. Our naval gunners fired a royal 15-gun salute, an insincere show of friendship. We sweltered on the quarterdeck in full-dress uniform to receive him. His state barge pulled alongside. Onto the deck stepped a man of barely 5 foot. His retinue, however, made up for his insignificant stature. Gold-edged cloaks shimmering in the sun, flowing headdresses ringed with bands of golden ropes as thick as thumbs, curved silver kunji knives studded with precious jewels, pushed in every sash, a forest of ceremonial rifles, and 6 falconers, each bearing a hooded falcon, tethered to their leather gauntlets. "This way, sir!" We pried the alarmed Sultan apart from his protesting bodyguards. Surrounding them, our naval escorts hustled them to the wardroom below decks, while the Sultan was frog-marched in the opposite direction to the captain's cabin. A stern Pop intoned the traditional flowery greeting. "Praise be to Allah! May he grant you many healthy sons! May you have abundant camels!" After sharing 3 obligatory small cups of coffee, Pop announced the Sultan was to have the honour of entertaining 20 of us at his palace over the following 3 days. "And then," Pop continued, "we wish to visit the interior and will require 40 camels and a suitable escort." "Impossible," the Sultan protested. "Not even my own officials travel there. The indigenous aborigines in that part of the island are unpredictable cannibals. And," he concluded, "the trails are impassable." Pop persisted. "As your duty to the British Crown, may I remind your Majesty?" Palms raised, head back, the Sultan gesticulated defeat. Grim-faced, he swept ashore to arrange for an official receiving ceremony at his palace the following day. What I expected in a palace, I don't quite know. But never cuckoo clocks and cheap divans from London's Tottenham Court Road, albeit with priceless Persian rugs and silk cushions. After removing our boots, we were escorted to a dark reception room. Entering, Negro slaves sprinkled our hands with refreshing rose water. The Sultan, regal, posed on a dais one end of the adjoining hall. For the few moments before we were seated, I edged towards a shaft below one of the 4 wind towers, wallowed in the delicious downdraft. Slightly lifting my arms, my sweat-plastered shirt dried from my sides. "Please be seated." Silent, we sat. Careful to keep the soles of my feet from pointing at the Sultan, I folded my legs uncomfortably and took my place on a woven mat at one of a 6 silvered copper tables. Picking from bowls of pistachio nuts and roasted hemp seed, half listening to the drone of formal greetings, I took stock. Mute-coloured stained glass arced over each of 6 wooden doors, ranged along 3 walls, closed out the sun. fretted light pools from lattice windows illuminated a room so ornate, so overly decorated with gold leaf and garish colours, it was a bad dream. Shaded cloisters ringed the sun-bleached courtyards, and gardens protecting those who ventured out. A waterless fountain stood redundant in a blue mosaic pool. I pitied the sultan's concubines and wives imprisoned in that place. Strict Purda kept them hidden in the harem's wing. Did they spy on us from behind the carved alabaster screens along the upper floor? Did they walk the garden when we infidels were not around? Trays of savory pilaf appeared, so heavy each took two men to carry the pyramid of food. A roasted lamb crouched gruesomely on a rice bed, its head attached. The lamb bore two headless chickens perched on a nest of boiled eggs. On each chicken rode a quail. No plates, no cutlery. We ate directly off the copper tables, grabbing meat from carcasses and scooping rice using only the fingers of our right hands, fearful of touching anything with my unclean left. I sat on it. The sultan proffered the sheep's eyeball to his honored guest, Pop Riley. Admiringly, I watched him down the prized tidbit with apparent relish. Later on, back on ship, reliving the deliciousness of the feast, one innocent member of the ship's crew chipped in. I had a hard time with a morsel of liver, but out of politeness I forced myself. You didn't. You ate it. We laughed. Raw liver is set before each place to attract bluebottles and keep flies off your food. The poor man blanched. Pop versus the Sultan. A verbal wrestling match ensued. 3 days it lasted, as direct questioning and commitment to anything as specific as yes, no, time, or date went against Eastern culture. It took poor Pop 3 interminable days of rambling negotiations to extract the Sultan's signature. He caved in at last. Mission accomplished, it was anchors away. We caught the evening tide and were gone. Next stop, Kishim, on the mainland, to tackle the Sultan's uncooperative governor. We steamed into Kishim at dawn and anchored offshore since there was no harbour. Flouting protocol, our flotilla of surf boats roared ashore uninvited. Grouped in formation, armed, we strode purposely for the mud fort. There we confronted a shame-faced governor in the rubbish-littered compound. "What's the meaning of this?" Pop pointed to the solitary ruler's colours atop the flagpole. "Where's the Union Jack? This insult to His Majesty I refuse to condone." A lead actor, Pop ranted his displeasure. The governor, hands clasped, eyes averted, sheepishly excused his oversight and ordered the Union Jack hoisted and the requisite 21-gun salute. Once the smoke cleared from the fort's ancient pair of cannon, Pop nodded, sniffed, and followed the governor over to the threshold of the bug-ridden residence, so accepting his hospitality. Pop presented him with the Sultan of Socotra's fiat, commanding him to provide labour and land for Britain's airstrip. Ignoring courtesy, we set sail the same evening. Another quarrel with another sultan in another state waited.